Hello, and welcome to Lifetimes of Learning, a production at the Buddhist Education Centre, which is a part of Buddhist Discussion Centre Australia. In our podcast series, we will be discussing the wisdom and teachings of Buddha from 2,600 years ago, which can help improve our happiness and lives at a deep level in this modern era. In this podcast, we will cover part one of How to Give Up Ill Will. Wherever you are, we invite you to bring your attention to the present, smile, and listen to the teachings of the Buddha.
We want to move on specifically to ill will. So ill will, we would recognize, it's like a spectrum of intensity, if you like. So we would all recognize ill will could be manifesting as at the worst end of the scale, or the grossest end of the scale would be anger, hate, you know, being furious, being extremely upset, annoyed, even maybe to the extent that a person could be violent under the effect of ill will. If we move it back, slide it down in intensity, we would find that we were dissatisfied a lot of the time. We had a lot of anxiousness and anxiety. We were annoyed, maybe argumentative, maybe fault-finding. Even it can be fault-finding with ourselves. You know, we may not like ourselves. And so it's a general dislike wanting things to stop, you know, things that we don't like, would they go away, you know? So these can be all sorts of myriads of types of behaviour, and attitudes can flow from this. If we go to a more subtler level, it can be seen as just discomfort, dislike, not wanting this to be, like, you can actually turn the channels on your television on the basis of ill will. Mm-hmm. Just, oh, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this. It can just be operating like that because it's part of our mind. It's part of our normal way that we live, right? But even though it's part of the way we live, it doesn't mean it's beneficial. Is there another mind or other minds that we could do those same things with that would be better? Obviously, if we can deal with difficult people in a way that didn't lead us to arguing and getting annoyed and being frustrated, if we had a way of operating where we had a skill set that could manage those situations without it destroying our well-being and happiness, clearly that'd be way better for us. But the problem is that ill will has its own logic system. It has its own way of seeing the world, its own way of understanding the world, and it doesn't have scope to behave in a different way. Mm-hmm. So ill will basically will it's like a dog barks, you know, it doesn't make another noise, right? Ill will has its own way of seeing everything. So if you're on a mind of ill will, it's like, say you have a mind of irritability, it's like everything you come across seems to cause you to be irritable. It doesn't matter, you know, there's some noises, I wish they'd be quiet, you know. Whatever the stimulus is, ill will doesn't like it, you know, because that's its nature, that's all it can do. It can't be a mind that enjoys things, finds interest in things, is praising people or enjoying people. It can't do those things. It's limited in its scope of what its responses can be and how it can perceive things. So if you walk around with the mind of ill will, you're going to bump into a lot of things that annoy you automatically. In the world, you're not going to see things that you will appreciate, or things that will bring you pleasure, or things that will bring you joy. You're walking down the same street, there could be many beautiful things, beautiful flowers, beautiful gardens, beautiful architecture, all sorts of things. But if you've got a mind of ill will, you'll be seeing the things that you don't like. So out of all the things that are around, your mind will be cognating and resonating with things that the ill will is disturbed by. So that's how these minds are. They're all like that. So if you have a mind of worry, it will be getting things that worry it. Like, I've seen minds of worry, I've been stuck on something and I've managed to get off it and stop worrying. But then a few minutes later, I'm worrying about another thing. And then, all right, I can get rid of that. But then the next thing, I'm worrying about something else. It's because I'm still on the mind of worry. And normally it might, if it's there's something particularly that worries you, you'll just be tuning into that all the time, right? But if it's not something in particular, but you just have this mind of worry, you could be laying in bed. First you're worrying about the bills, then you're worrying about your children, then you're worrying about the shopping, then you're worrying about, because that's what that mind is doing. That's all it can do. It's called a mind of worry because that's its nature. So ill will is the same. Now all the hindrances are the same. They have a diet of those things that it does, you know. So ill will can't enjoy, you can't enjoy things with ill will. You can't be friendly with ill will. You can't, be kind. Actually, ill will is kind of the opposite of being kind. If you look at its nature, you know, if you're very angry, you want to really rip into the other person, you know. You want to put them down or stop them in their tracks or convince them that they're completely wrong and you're right. It's like the opposite of friendliness. You're really trying to shut the other person down. And if you're really angry, you might want to hit them as the way of, it's like you're interested in harming them. Mm-hmm. You're not interested in the well-being. You want to do some damage. That's the really angry mind. It's like that. So when you scale that back, even when it's not anger, it's still a basic dislike of others. That's its nature. It's not going to turn around and like people. It's basically anti-social, anti-friendly, anti-kind. You know, that's how it manifests. That's its activities. So I think probably if you just see that the logic system of ill will means it can only behave in certain ways, and there's a whole lot of other ways that would be good, like forgiving people, recognizing that people that are upset are in pain themselves and maybe you could comfort them, recognizing that somebody that's struggling, maybe your kindness would be helpful. But ill will doesn't have those options. It doesn't have that kit of parts. So this is the nature of these minds, that they're unwholesome, they're unbeneficial, not only to others, but they're not beneficial to us because they also treat us badly, just as they would treat others badly. Those minds are beating up on us. Those minds are not friendly to us. They're not our friends. They're not supporting our well-being. They're causing our problems. They're happy to... They don't have a receptor that says, oh, am I giving Frank a hard time, you know, if it's me or you or whoever. Those minds don't have a process where they're assessing whether they're actually causing us pain. That doesn't exist. As long as they're on stage, they're just chomping away, disturbing us, causing our anxiety, causing our confusion, causing our annoyance, without any concern of whether that is painful for us to experience. So we are the ones that are suffering from our own defilements and our own hindrances, just as much as anyone else would suffer from. So this is the idea that ultimately we have to abandon them, because they're completely remotely connected to our true well-being. They can't contribute to our well-being. You know, even though on one level they might be habitual, you know, we might actually use them to get things done, you know. Sometimes annoyance can drive people to do something, right? Also, annoyance can be, you know, some there are, can be skills associated with these minds, right? They're not stupid. It doesn't say they don't have intelligence, but they're very much negative in how they operate. So, but they can be clever. My word, they can be clever. An angry person maybe can provide a magnificent argument for why they're right and you're wrong. They have intelligence, but underneath that, their core business is not wholesome. Their core behavior cannot generate well-being and happiness. So the fact that some of these minds are clever induces us to use them. People like winning. They like arguing. They like maybe overcoming or maybe even controlling other people. This happens, right? And this is the nature of unwholesome minds. They're not really interested in the well-being of others. So they're very tricky and sticky. So they're sticky and tricky. Mm-hmm. They're sticky because they're hard to let go because we're grabbing. And they're tricky because they con us into using them and not suspecting what they really like. You know? So worry seems to be contributing something that's beneficial. Maybe we think we're dealing, we have to fix this problem. So we start worrying and worrying and worrying. But the worry mind will never fix problems. It's not capable of fixing problems. It doesn't have any skills and tools for that. If you want to fix problems, you have to use your best mind. You have to analyze things. You have to get some evidence. You have to consider things from different viewpoints. You have to have a way of assessing the risks and the strengths and the weaknesses of the different elements of the problem. Worry hasn't got any of that stuff. Worry just worries. But it looks like and it feels like you're dealing with the problem because you're on it, but you're worrying about it, and that's not going to reduce the problem at all. There's no, I don't remember, and I've thought about this, any problems that I've been able to solve through worry. But when I've, you know, the next day I've sat down and I've written, I thought, that could fix it. When I've done analysis or used a different mind, I could find a solution usually. Or I could find a plan, you know, I could plan a solution, or I could assess something and figure some of it out, right? But the worry mind is not capable of that. Yet it might be the mind that we use when we have problems and we might be stuck on it for ages. So this is the sense that they're tricky. Okay, so what we've talked about it. So I think the thing we need to go on to is, okay, how do we abandon inquiry? What's the method? How do we firstly let it go and then further, how do we abandon it? So we're not in the ring boxing our own mind, you know, which is giving us a hard time. We want to get out of the ring, leave that mind and go and do something better. So that before we do that, I want to just go around and see, firstly, Simon, you've got any comments you'd like to make or other elements of this that you'd like to contribute?
The hindrances stop us from seeing the way the world really is.
Yeah.
And so with anger, some of the symptoms of anger is that things, you know, people are always wrong and stuff's not going well, and someone can put a lot of effort into something and give it to you, but it's like, I don't really want that. Even though actually, you know, on another day it could be the most perfect, beautiful thing. So the other ways it sort of manifests is, you really want to, it tries to solve the problem by controlling your external circumstances. Yeah. So it's very difficult to accept people for the way they are, because you want to say, can you stop doing that? Or, you know, just don't be like that or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So the anger, the irritation is about trying to fix things, which just, like, it goes on this journey to try to solve the problem, but it just can never, just causes more problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is something to do with the bias of anger. So a good way of looking at the bias of anger is, say you had an argument with somebody. The angry mind will not concede a point to the other person. Like, they could give you a good argument, but the angry mind will never acknowledge that. It will just try to defeat it. So it's not balanced. It's completely lopsided. It's not capable of really empathizing with the other person's viewpoint, of accepting the validity of the other person's belief or understanding. It's completely, there's a word for this, I'm not sure what the word is, but I'm using the word bias, but it's one-eyed. Mm-hmm. And all it really wants to do is win.
Mm-hmm.
It just wants to win, right? It'll end up, when it's run out of good arguments, it'll just yell. It'll just abuse the person, right? It's so committed to defeating them. And even when it doesn't have any resources left, it'll just be brute force and it'll scream and yell and throw a tantrum.
Mm.
Now, this isn't a good mind, right? This isn't a sane mind. It's not. On one level, it's intelligent, but it's not wise. It's really unwise. And it's incredibly narrow in its way of processing things. So this mind is not a self. This is not who we are. This is just one type of consciousness that can come up, right? We can have lots of different types. If we have a love mind, we will never behave like that. We will never just be throwing abuse at the other person. We will never be trying to defeat them, because love just doesn't do those things. Love is interested in the other person's well-being. So these types of consciousness, we might take them to be a self. But they're not. They're just different types of consciousness. And some days we're on this one, and some days, or some minutes we're on this one, and then we're on that one, and then we're on the other one. If we think that they're our self, then we'll hang on and fight to win, right? If we know they're not a self, that they're just one type of consciousness, we won't be so dogged and so bloody-minded. And we'll be able to recognize that this is not beneficial. This behavior is immature. This behavior is not helpful. And we'll just not do it. Right? So this is the blindness of the hindrances. They are completely blind to what later on, I mean, even the next day we might recognize we were over the top. You know? The hindrances don't have that... they don't have that, like, they don't recognize their own nature. So when we're in them, we're blind. Okay, so what we need to do is, firstly just go around and see how you're going, and then we'll talk about how do we get off these five hindrances, and specifically today it's ill will. So, Connie, I notice you smiling quite often, recognizing, you know, things that sort of run true.
Yeah, like, I always feel like I have love for my family, but sometimes when it comes to talking to them, the lack of patience,
yeah.
And so I didn't yell at them, but sometimes I know that I haven't used the best tone that I could use talking
yeah.
to my parents, and I'm starting to assess like my love for them, probably not enough. That's why I still have got this more subtle level of ill will.
Yeah.
When interacting with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because we're passive.
Mm-hmm.
So we accept the minds that arise in us. We just accept them.
Mm-hmm.
So if it happens that an annoyed mind arises, then we just behave that way. We don't have a way of flicking to a different mind because we're passive. We're accepting of everything. But in Buddhism, we're examining, is this wholesome or unwholesome? Because if we're accepting unwholesomes, then we're going to behave, you know, according to the way the unwholesome mind is, according to its characteristics. So it's like we have to be a gatekeeper to check, what is my mental state? Is this a wholesome or is it an unwholesome? And that's active. That means we're doing something. You know, we do that in the world all the time, where we're making decisions about should we do this, shouldn't we do this. We're checking, we're figuring things out. But with our mind, we just let it all come. You know, it can be all sorts of stuff, and we don't care. Right? Well, that's no good. That's passive. So we have to be able to consider and examine. And if we know the characteristics, And that's why we've been explaining them, is so that we know what they look like. So when they come up, we can see it and we can say, aha, that's, I know what that is. Then we can be active. And then we, having identified what it is, we can then do something to do better. So you can see in your family, it's very easy, it's normal to be passive. But it's, maybe it's not good enough.
Yeah, it's just a habit. And now, habit, yeah, got to be more active in assessing the mind and choosing a response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. You've got to be awake, which is mindfulness, right? You have to have mindfulness.
Yeah. Thank you.
Nam, how'd you go?
Yeah, I think it really resonates. Yeah. Makes me reflect on a few examples.
Yeah, can you be a bit, speak up a bit?
Oh, yeah, thanks. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. I think as you were saying, going through the teachings, like it makes me reflect on a few examples.
Yes.
Like for example, like I caught up with my mentor once a month about work, but then I was asking her, like, oh, what can I do to gain the most knowledge before I leave? And then she kind of put it back to me saying, what about thinking about like what can you do to leave like a better system behind before you leave? And I realized like, yeah, I had that kind of selfish mindset, but then when there's a maybe an ill will, and then when I hear she mentioned that, and my mind kind of shifted, and then it also helps me be more patient at work by having like what can I do to sort of make other people's life better, even after I leave. So yeah, like I felt like having a shift in mind really makes a difference.
That's good. Incy, how'd you go?
I have a lot of unwholesome minds arising a lot of the time.
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah, and
if you, that's normal. If you've got some strategy, then that's okay.
Yeah, and obviously, like, you try to be mindful, you try to generate the wholesome minds, but they come so quickly, and sometimes there's, like, these comments in your head that's trying to get in an argument, you know, you should this, you should not that.
Yeah.
It makes it so convincing, like, with a slip of a mind, like, you can think, yeah, maybe I should. It's like you kind of lose, it's like you got conned into believing on all the comments and like, yeah, you should do that based on your previous experience, which, yes, may be true to one circumstance, but it seems like because we, that circumstance work, we keep relying on it and then trying to replicate that success, and then we kind of just got off track, believing, you know, that's the best thing to do every time, which is not.
Yeah.
It's like you're trying to replicate success more than trying to, you know, the concern wasn't about, you know, is this the best interest for both parties involved?
Yeah.
It's just more like, okay, that worked that time, it must work every time. It's like, it's really fixed about just having it a specific way. There's no leeway for, like, any, you know, any generosity or any patience. So, yeah, I can see that occurring a lot. So, but I'm trying to always... when I recognize there's an unwholesome mind, it's like when I drive, you know, especially when you drive to work in the morning, there's a lot of people who will cut into your lane. And then it's very easy for you to just say, that is wrong. You know, they shouldn't have done that. That was dangerous, you know. But at the same time, it's just like, okay, well, if I get tangled up in this anger, I'm going to be upset for a long time.
Yes.
And that person doesn't even know I'm angry. What's the point? Yeah. It's just
That's
like
right.
me, you know, getting stuck in it, this emotion for no reason.
Yeah.
So I just like, okay, I want to have a harmonious relationship with all beings, so I'll just drop this anger and just, the next moment. Yeah.
Look, a lot of the things we get angry about on a conventional level, you could say, oh, well, you're justified. You know, I mean, they shouldn't be cutting you off in the traffic. They shouldn't have. There's a lot of things that people shouldn't be doing. And when they're doing it to us, we get upset. And conventionally, you'd say, well, of course you're justified. Their behaviour was really bad. Right? But the problem is the anger is harmful to us.
Yeah.
The annoyance is harmful to us. And so it gets down to how do we deal with those things in a way that mean that we can look after ourselves, we can look after our well-being and happiness. We don't cause that to cause more damage. You know, somebody does something that's not nice to us. If we handle it in the wrong way, we continue the damage. We make the damage grow.
Yeah.
And that's self-inflicted. Right? So even though they might have done the wrong thing, and we might be justified in being annoyed, but we're not justified in being annoyed in terms of our well-being. There's nothing that is justified. No unwholesome is justified if it's causing our, if it's harming us,
mm-hmm.
if it's harmful to us.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the logical justification is, right? We're actually shooting ourselves in the foot. So can we deal with those things in a way which is wholesome, firstly, and then that's also appropriate, right? That's skillful, right? So this is a whole skill set we have to build. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, I think to know that, like, you know, to recognize that, like, sometimes because we follow that, you know, oh, you're justified to be angry,
yeah.
you actually believe in your own sort of angry mind that
yeah.
it's right.
And that's one of the tricks of
yeah.
why it's tricky.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense to be angry.
Which is not nice anyway, though. It's like, I want to be right so I can be angry. It just sounds really wrong when you try to say it that way, but we
yeah.
get tricked all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The five hindrances are highly addictive
yeah.
and very seemingly rational.
Yeah.
This is the main problem.
That makes sense to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, that's part of it.
So we need sort of interventions, isn't it? That's
yes.
what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
Interventions and disruptions of these sorts of patterns of thinking.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, look, the problem is those two things, they're highly addictive. They make sense to us, but they're highly dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the bit that we don't factor in, right?
And
if you look around in the world, you can see the danger of these.
Mm.
And also you can see that generally everyone believes the mental state that arises in their mind, right? So you can see people doing ridiculous things, you know, things that'll put them in prison, things that'll, you know, breaking the law, things that are self-destructive, simply because people are caught by the mental state that's arisen, and they don't have a way of recognizing that it's harmful. It's addictive and it's self-justifying.
Mm, mm.
So the person that's doing something really dumb, at that moment thinks they're doing something completely makes sense to them.
Mm.
Right? Everybody that's doing whatever they're doing, even the stupidest things from their side, and it can be us too, we believe what we're doing makes sense. But is it beneficial? Oh, we didn't ask that question. Is it helpful? Is it wholesome? I don't know. I never thought of that. But this is like the immediacy is these minds are like traps. They are tricky. So, but the point about it is, once you know that, once you recognize that and you understand that, you're way better off. You're so much better. You're empowered to deal with those minds in a way that you don't get caught by them as much, right? Okay, initially, there's no way we can just jump off those minds, you know, completely. It's a process over time where we learn how to not be caught. We learn a set of skills where we build skills of how not to get caught up in dumb minds, basically. That's what we have to do. We have to train ourselves. Like we've got skills in all sorts of things that we learn for life, right? Did we learn this skill? No, never. So we keep getting caught up in things that are basically harmful. So we have to start building skills. This is sort of our own inner development. Skills of how to develop our wholesomeness and how to abandon our unwholesomeness. And there, you can develop these skills. They're perfectly developable, I should say. So that's what our journey should be if we're on a path to what is our well-being and happiness. That's a key part of what we need to understand. Because the hindrances are the reason that we don't have well-being and happiness. We have to not use them. That's the skill. So let's have a look at it, right? What are these skills? Yes, no.
What are your thoughts on sadness? Sometimes I find comfort in sadness. But I'm not sure if that's the right thing, because I enjoy sometimes listening to sad music, sad movie, have a cry, and I feel better.
Have a cry.
This is what I was saying.
At the same time, I'm really enjoying this.
You're enjoying it. Okay. Well, normally sadness is accompanied by unpleasant feeling. And it doesn't lead to, well, you said afterwards, after you've had a cry, you feel better, right? So it's sort of cathartic. But the problem is, when we use these minds, it's like, this is to do with karma, okay? So when we use something with volition, it means that we're making the karma for that mind to come again. It's like we're making the causes for that mind to arise again. So this is what we conventionally call habit. That if we do something a lot, it's like it comes back to us again and again and again and again, and that becomes habitual. So the problem is that these minds produce other minds that can arise in the future of the same type. So if we're an angry person now, when we're angry, we're causing ourselves to be angry again. So say somebody yells at me, and then I get upset and I yell back. So what's happening is, when I yell back, I'm making the causes for somebody in the future to yell at me. And when I get upset, I'm making the causes, when they yell at me, to get upset again. That's karma. And the karma is, in this sense, it's like a loop, right? That what you use, you're making it more of the same. So if you use unwholesomes, then you're going to have them again and again and again, until you learn either, well, you don't have to learn, right? But the only way you stop that is when you learn, hang on, this isn't helping. Actually, sadness does not bring peace. Sadness does not bring clarity. Sadness does not bring wisdom. There's a whole lot of things it just doesn't bring, right? And what it does bring is more sadness, because that's the karma of it. So in the present, you might have some rationale of why you think it's okay, but you haven't analysed it in these terms. You're just seeing it on superficially, on the surface. So some people think by being angry, by letting it all out, somehow that's fixing the anger. Well, they might feel better, but they've made another mind of anger to come back in the future. And also they've made a belief system that thinks anger is good. That's the karma of that sort of behavior. They have the view that anger is good, it's helpful, right? So that'll come back again too. So this is part of the tricky nature of the hindrances, that on one level they do make sense to a particular way of looking at them, but the way we're looking at them is very, very limited. Those angry minds or those sadness minds don't have any idea of karma. They don't know that they are themselves unwholesome. They have no inkling that they are flawed, that those minds are actually detrimental, that they are an operating system which causes pain. They don't know any of that, right? So when you take on the mind, you also take on its belief system, which is totally flawed. And that belief system will never lead to your true well-being. It's impossible. So you have to consider, is it wholesome or unwholesome? This is a really simple test, right? Will this lead to my long-term well-being and happiness? And that means my mind is happy, bright, clear, peaceful, joyful. Sadness won't do that. There might be a short-term buzz or hit that you're getting out of it, but it's only a buzz or a hit. It's not really the foundations of happiness. So. Yeah. Good question, though.
I suppose if you think of it this way, if you think you kind of enjoy sadness, then ask yourself, would you want a life full of sadness then? Mm-hmm. Like if you really enjoy it, would you enjoy a life that is full of sadness? You wouldn't, right? So mm-hmm. you kind of know the answer, even intellectually, that it is not something that you would like. I think it's maybe when you release that sort of sadness, you feel a bit better, but it's not, it's the releasing of the sadness that makes you feel better. It's not the actual sadness that is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't, that's a system that you've got some pain and you're trying to treat it with sadness.
Mm-hmm.
Sadness is not a medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find a better way of treating the pain than stimulating your sadness.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's lots of ways of treating the pain, which is wholesome,
that
don't result in more pain, right? But sadness is not one of those. All right, so we'll go on to the... Okay, so how do we pretty much understand that ill will's not beneficial. It's not wholesome. Right? So that's the first thing. So how do we build a skill set that can manage the fact that all these mental states can arise unprompted? We didn't set out... Well, in Nam's case, she did set out to be sad. But generally, we didn't say, all right, now I'm going to worry. Right, okay, let's go. Right? No, they just come by themselves. We don't even know what's coming because they're not self. They're not self. They're not... If things were self, we would know what the heck was going on because we would be the owner. They would be something that we would be causing. So these things arise unprompted. They're mm-hmm. not self. So the trick is it wholesome or unwholesome? So the first thing is you have to be in the present. You have to develop mindfulness. This is really one of the key bases of why we need to be mindful. So we can see what's happening in our mind, right? If we're not mindful, we're asleep. We just, anything comes and anything's fine, right? We let it all come, it doesn't really matter. Right? But mindfulness gives us the possibility of seeing what is arising and therefore being able to recognize wholesome or unwholesome. The second thing is to be able to identify the different mental states. Now, we've talked about ill will, dislike, annoyance, irritability, you know, being negative, finding fault finding, being critical, these are all, or even just, you know, a sense of something that might lead to boredom because you just don't really get it, you're not into it. That can be subtle, dislike. So the thing is to be able to say that this mental state will not contribute to my well-being. This mental state, if I get in there, like if I get in with the annoyance and if I just leave it there, it will just generate annoyance. That's all it can do. And there's what comes with annoyance is unpleasant feeling. So my mental experience will be unpleasant and disturbed. So therefore, it's got to be unwholesome. Mm-hmm. So I need to look and find something better than this. Right? So that's actually a positive step. It's investigation of mental states is what it's called. And then once you've done that, then you can say, all right, I want to generate a wholesome. Mm-hmm. So the sort of wholesomes that will work against anger, the first one that is a universal solvent of anger is called loving kindness, which is a deliberate practice in Buddhism. So maybe, Simon, you could talk about loving kindness and actually you could give examples of how you used it to deal with this perpetual sort of annoyance or difficult circumstances. That would be great.
So loving kindness is, first of all, you have it towards yourself. It's a respect, it's a gratitude, it's a joy, it's a love for who you are and everything that you're about. So that it helps you to accept who you are, because we often carry around a lot of self-hatred that sort of, we don't really address it, but We are often very critical of ourselves. We should be better. We should be doing this. If only I had, so on and so forth. So loving kindness firstly begins to allow you to accept who you are 100%, as opposed to this constant dissatisfaction to the sound of your voice, the way that you look, the way you move, these sorts of things. So you generate a love and respect and a gratitude for who you are and what you're about. And then what you're doing is, once you have, you've generated that feeling for yourself, you then want to have the wish that everyone else can feel exactly the same way. They don't have this anxiety that we're walking around, that we're not good enough, and that we need to do more, and we should be doing so many other things that we're not, and get into this tangle of, you know, we can't accept who we are, we hate who we are. So you turn it towards yourself, and then you really develop a genuine wish that other beings can feel the same way, can have this idea that they are good and they do matter and they are important. So I use this technique in order to become better in the classroom, because the first time I started teaching several years ago, I had a very, very challenging class. It was very frustrating because the students weren't listening, they weren't paying attention to me, they weren't behaving in the classroom, they weren't learning anything, they weren't doing anything. And no matter what I did on a conventional level, I couldn't get them to respond to me and what I was trying to do. So I knew about metta, and I knew that metta is very powerful. So I applied this technique to my work. So what I did was, in the mornings, I would start by sending metta to myself, which is also, it's a sense of forgiveness. So whatever mistakes that you've made in the past, you can forgive yourself for that. And also, if you send yourself metta, it helps you to recognize that failure is not a major problem, it's just something that happens. So I'd send love and respect and gratitude to myself, and then I would send it to the students that I was teaching. And over time, they started to get a little bit better. They started to calm down. They started to be a little bit better behaved. They were still doing some of the things that they would normally do. But what I notice is that when your metta is very well developed and very strong, someone can do something that maybe 3 months ago you would find really irritating is not irritating anymore. You would notice that you used to find it irritating, but what it's like is it sort of, their behaviour just slides off you. It doesn't stick to you in the way that it used to. It doesn't irritate you or disturb you in the way that it does, because you've got this baseline level of loving kindness for yourself and that other person that you've developed to quite a powerful degree. So I found it was exceptionally powerful and a very positive practice to do when dealing with people who explicitly, you know, we're talking teenagers here, don't really want to deal with you. You know, because school is torture, or, you know, what you're trying to do to us is horrible, and you're locking me in this room. And so I found it very, very powerful addition to what I was doing. Yeah.
So you used to do it in the mornings before you'd go to school?
Yeah, I'd do it in the mornings before I go to school. So
it's like a meditation.
Yeah, I would imagine that I was sitting in the classroom and sending metta. And so when I would go to the classroom, that mind would come up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay. So the point about this is that metta, as this particular antidote to ill will, can be developed in meditation. It's a meditation. So if you go online, you'll find this is a basic Buddhist meditation. And the idea is you're building a mind and a skill set to deal with life, to deal with the fact that life is a mixture of good things and not good things, pleasant things and not pleasant things, good experiences and not good experiences, easy, good relationships and not. So if we only have anger to deal with all of that complexity, we're like hopelessly under-resourced to deal with life. we've only got a negative process that we can use to manage all these different experiences. So we have to build a different option, an option of that is incredibly robust and powerful and skillful at dealing with just life as it is, all its ups and downs and goods and bads and whatever. And that, in this case, is the mind of loving kindness. So it's a mind, and it can be developed, and it can become stronger and stronger. And actually, the Buddhist monks, in many cases, live in this mind because they've cultivated it so much. They've meditated a lot, and they've developed this mind, so it's like automatic. It's just their nature. And not only Buddhist monks, many people have developed loving kindness like this. So in the end, if you develop a mind where you more or less live in it all the time, that's like a total protection against the unwholesome mental state. If you're living in a wholesome mental state, how does the unwholesome get in there? It doesn't, because you've that wholesome mental state is on stage, and there's no space for the unwholesome, and it is a protection against the unwholesome arising. And it just turns out that loving kindness, as you develop it, weakens the unwholesome state of ill will. So it's like a natural, completely self-natured natural medicine that can be used against the illness of ill will. So it's worth spending time, it's worth investing in that sort of wholesome mental state, because it does the job of removing the unwholesome by itself. You don't have to get in there and, you know, whatever you might have to do to abandon the unwholesome. The wholesome mind does that. It's its property. So loving kindness is particularly relevant for ill will, but it turns out it is an antidote to every other hindrance. It's an antidote to flurry and worry, doubt, sense desire, them all. So in Buddhism, that's one of the main practices. It's like a foundational mind to develop, because it facilitates the whole process of moving towards being well and happy, having a happy mind, happy mental state, and also being able to not be thrown around by what's going on. It might be very unpleasant, but the mind of loving kindness can, when it's strong, can handle that, no problem.
This concludes part one of How to Give Up Ill Will. Thank you for tuning into our Lifetimes of Learning channel. You can access a wider range of Buddhist teachings and discussion commentaries in different formats from our website www.buddhisteducationcentre.org.au and learn more about our centre and what we do to help spread the Buddhist teaching and help others. May you be well and happy. May all beings be well and happy.